Okay, hello everyone. Welcome back to the Five Hole Fantasy Podcast with the Taxi Squad. We are your hosts tonight, Alan, Maddie K, and myself, Jay. It is Sunday, October 29th, the end of week 3, and we are excited to be with you on the van cab tonight for some quick fares around the league. Craig's not on with us tonight, but as he usually says, let's start up on the fares and jump right into it. Welcome in, everyone. Welcome back to the Taxi Squad. We are your hosts for tonight, Alan and Maddie K, here for some quick fares review of week 3. How are we doing, everybody?
All right, man. Watching that slugfest tonight between Calgary and Edmonton.
Yeah, fellas, great to be back. No shortage of things to talk about across the league, and Heritage Classic on as we speak.
And absolutely with McDavid, McJesus back. The Lord's Day.
The return.
The Sunday, the Lord's Day, and McJesus right on the roster. My goodness, couldn't have scripted it better. And he's got points on the board, too.
I think Markstrom's going to be the real hero of this game because he might see 50 shots.
Oh, man, it is definitely a great game of hockey to finish off this Sunday, this weekend. Leading into Halloween, and of course, obviously, the end of week 3, too. Okay, I guess we'll just jump straight into it. We're going to start on a bit of a somber note with a couple of talking points. First and foremost, today is Sunday, October 29th, 2023, and actually yesesterday on Saturday, October 28th, 2023, our thoughts and our prayers go out to the Johnson family. Adam Johnson, he formerly played in the NHL and the AHL. He was playing professional hockey in the UK, and he actually suffered a neck laceration from an opposing player's skate. Unfortunately, it actually did cut his carotid artery, and he didn't receive immediate medical treatment in time. He was rushed to the hospital, but he didn't survive. So our thoughts and our prayers go out to the Johnson family for their loss, and especially to the community, larger hockey community as a whole. On that somber note, there are some other talking points and injuries to report as well throughout the league. Matheson is now ruled as day-to-day, although he is traveling with the team on the upcoming road trip. So positive news there. Definitely to watch out as well to see who else steps up to take that PP1 QB spot. Tom Chabot, as well, is going to be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks with a hand injury. And that's a pretty poignant piece of information given the power play quarterback situation that's flaring up in Ottawa. Eric Comrie, as well, is week to week with a lower body injury. I believe UPL was called, or if not called up, he is slated for, I believe, the next starts. And I don't remember who the next goalie called up to be the backup was, actually.
I don't know. It sounds like they're just hoping Devin Levi can start this week.
Can come back. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
UPL had a good game.
Yeah,
today.
Shout out.
Shout out the Avalanche.
Absolutely.
I mean, he was probably in the tiny fraction of leagues where people own him. He was probably riding the pine.
I'm going to say, too, like the Sabres, right? Like if you're picking up Devin Levi, UPL, yeah, like that league is probably deep enough where you probably were welcomely surprised with what happened today with the Sabres, especially against one of the league-leading teams in the Avs. Speaking of the Avs as well, there was a Makar Okposo incident at the end of the second period this afternoon, and it was quite scary for Makar. He slammed hard into the boards right onto his right knee. He did leave the game, but he returned in the third for several shifts and kept going back and forth to the locker room. He said in the post-game interview that he was going to be fine and that he was lucky, but definitely something to monitor given our fantasy managers being aware that Makar has not remained fully healthy throughout the past few seasons. Definitely something to watch out for with Band-Aid Boy in training. Hopefully it's exactly just as Makar said, he will be fine, and that he was lucky. We mentioned Boldy as well previously, but yeah, Boldy is expected to practice with the Wild on the coming Wednesday. That's November 1st, 2023. So hopefully he comes back sooner rather than later. And again, Nico Hischier has been ruled out of today's game with an upper body injury. Points to note, Nico Hischier plays on the Devils power play one at the bumper slot. And I believe Timo Meier has been supplanting him given the injury absence and has taken over the power play one bumper on the Devils. Let's see if he keeps it. And that's it for our injury reports. We're going to send it on over to Alan for the first topic of Quick Fares.
Yeah, so not necessarily a incredibly fantasy relevant topic, but I would say as fantasy hockey players, it's somewhat relevant to us. I mean, a lot of us throw money into our fantasy hockey pools. I know I've personally, before I played fantasy hockey in this format, like I tried DraftKings once, like whatever. So I'm talking about the Shane Pinto suspension, his 41 game suspension. So I've been trying to read up as much as I can on this, listen to the big 32 thoughts breakdown on it. So the working theory is it may not have necessarily been like him just straight up dummy, like betting on hockey games. It may have been someone maybe using his account for him, proxy betting, which is not good on its own. And then they threw out the example on there on 32 Thoughts. It's like, oh, well, hey, it's like kind of like how you share your password, your Netflix password with someone, although that's not quite apples to apples. He could have been in a state at that moment where he couldn't place a bet, but someone, you know, hey, give me your account. I'll log in. I'll do this for you. But being an athlete, those accounts are heavily monitored. That suspicious activity was sent to league, it sounds like, right around the start of the season. As you notice with a lot of suspensions and punishments and stuff, typically the PA will try to contest it or lessen the punishment. That's not the case here. Like it completely sounds like this was negotiated between the PA, league, probably even Pinto's camp. So that 41 games is sticking. And then any offers that the Sens had offered him were rescinded. So that one by one that he was scoffing at, like not that long ago, he's not even getting that. Like his qualifying offer, I believe, was about $850K. So he's lost even that much more money. And I wouldn't be surprised if this ends in a trade for him, just kind of get change of scenery, breath of fresh air. But I mean, the only kind of silver lining in this is that 41 games has started with the beginning of the season. So he's already 7-8 games in. This is a story that'll probably take another week or two to fully unpack here, at least from us regular people finding everything out.
Yeah, Pinto the player, you know, obviously is going to have to sit half the season out. Pinto without a contract, you know, really does work out in Ottawa's favor in that they're a team that was right up against the cap. They had a cap situation with this exact player, and now through something that's happening exogenous to the team, they don't have that problem anymore. And to your point, he might sign at league min and with $470,000 or something over the last 41 games. However, that's going to work out. I think it's the problem the league wanted the least, given how closely they've been affiliated with sports gambling in Canada, and like the ads are everywhere. So for them to immediately have a conflict of interest in that exact area with players is probably not on high on their list of what they wanted.
They threw the hammer down hard. Like
they did. I think it was probably pretty unequivocal, right? This is cut and dry. We have a lot of latitude here in what we could do to you. Here's what we are going to do to you because we need an example set. Right. And it just happens to work out in Ottawa's favor, although especially with Norris coming back.
Right. And with the ascension of Grieg, man, like it's almost like Ottawa dodged a bullet by not going through with the whatever trades they were being pressured into.
100%.
The very bizarre part is if you look online right now and you look at CNN, it says he's suspended for 41 games for violating gambling rules. And right there in the first three lines, it says, the league has found no evidence that Pinto bet on NHL games. And so you kind of sit there going, wait, hold on. So if he's not bet on NHL games, but he's quote unquote violated gambling rules, like, this is the set mark for 41 games? Like, did Rafi Torres, who ended multiple careers, get anywhere near as close to 41 games with repeated histories? I don't know. Like, this is extreme, in my opinion, at least.
And then, honorable mention story is kind of, there's some backups starting to eat some starter goaltenders' lunches, man. You got Dostal of Anaheim, Connor Ingram out in Arizona, Joey DeCord, Joey OK, I now understand that joke, in Seattle. And I think was it Joseph or Justin Wall in Toronto? Which I think everyone knew about. Wall's ownership is like 60-something percent now. Like, he's the worst-kept secret. But yeah, those are my stories for the week.
Yeah, you wonder if it opens up some opportunity for Sammy at some pretty distressed value. You start to think of these guys in those split situations on a good team like Toronto is. You could argue Wall's hype has never been higher right now. If he comes in and delivers for a little bit, it's going to be good for the team. But more importantly, I think it's going to depress that value for Sammy if somebody was looking to maybe acquire a second half of that tandem or think he's going to get a few starts down the road. There's not a lot of history on Wall, right? So as good as that's looked early on, it could very quickly not look good. And all of a sudden, we're back to Samsonov, the guy they've paid.
It was mentioned before with goalie Bob as well, but there's definitely a component to which these goaltenders, in terms of, I guess, eating starters' lunches, who is actually on a contract or who is competing against a, I guess, short-term contract, similar to Wall. It was Wall and Samsonov. Samsonov's a UFA in the coming year. It's very possible that Wall takes over, in the sense that the Leafs might not see a long-term viable future. Now, Joey DeCord, I don't know. I think Grubauer did get the bag.
Oh no, he got
just the same way as Bob did, right? And so in that case, maybe Seattle, just like Florida, might heavily lean into the short-term component of, you know, like, seems like he's playing a little bit better. We'll give Grubauer a little time to settle in, but maybe if DeCord plays a little, you know, rougher around the edges, they immediately switch back.
Well, I think DeCord's got an opportunity for sure, because they've been in the category of they're letting in a lot of goals, but they are not scoring. And you can only stay snake bit for so long. But in the interim, I think it makes the leash that much shorter for either one of these guys that's in there, because they can't afford to keep letting in five a game. Right when they're only scoring 2.5 or 3.
I don't know the situation with Ingram, but I definitely noticed that they're not pulling as much a bulk starter veg Melka setup. It's definitely more of a 60-40, and I don't know if it'll roll even to just a 1A, 1B tandem straight up. I think Ingram has immense value. Like, this guy is functionally not drafted, but if you could get a 40% real serious 1B setup with Ingram off the wire, they're a pretty stingy team defensively.
What flies in the face of it for me is it's taken me this long to be able to stomach the idea that Vejmelka and Arizona's first goalie could be of rosterable value to me. To go down the rabbit hole in the hell of saying I need to look at their 1B, and I totally agree with you. It's just, it's really hard mentally to break out of this, you know, Arizona is terrible, you know, mantra that we've been in for so long. But the reality is there's fantasy viable people on this team, and it starts with the guys in net. Dostal might be worth keeping an eye on. I do like DeCord more. Like I say, I think he's got an opportunity to take that net.
Yeah. And maybe not like him getting 80% of the starts, but maybe it's more like 60-40, 55-45, like with a lot of these guys.
The 60 of the 40. That's right.
Yeah. I will say I might have overreacted ever so slightly the previous time talking about all these stingy Arizona defenses alongside the Lottie, Avalanche, and Bruins. Yeah, Arizona's back to a 20 goals against 20 goals scored setup. They're comfortably back in at zero goal differential. And yeah, we'll see how it goes. But obviously, in terms of value, right? Like, these guys are guys that are not drafted. Sure, take a flyer on them. I haven't really followed Dostal very closely. What's the setup and scenario there?
My guess is they're saving Gibson in the event, well, the most likely event that he gets traded. So it's more like, don't run Gibson into the ground to keep his value high, I think is what it is.
He could be the guy that has the highest potential games played ceiling if they decide to move Gibson at some point. He might become that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. My goodness. Dostal. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and he's, if look list. At his, look at his last few starts, man. Like,
hey, Ducks are four. They got 8 points. I think they're fourth in the Pacific. Like, they're there.
Yeah, man. He just got a win with an 871 save percentage. Well, I mean, we'll see. He got the win. He got
there
the
we go. Win. That's what matters. Gonna... He's getting the wins. It's not necessarily he's doing it with a 970 or something.
Yeah, if it's 974, it'd be a little bit different. But okay, well, after having watchlisted Dostal, Matty K, did you want to introduce your topic?
Yeah, so we want to take a look at who, through 3 weeks, the teams that have been scoring early and the teams that have been scoring often, to start to get a sense of who are the offenses that are separating themselves from the pack within the league. So we've spent a great deal of time talking about a few of these teams. Detroit's leading the league with 36 goals for. Right behind them, the LA Kings at 35 goals for, and Vegas doing Vegas things, as we've mentioned, with 35 goals for as well. The Kings, however, have allowed 30 goals compared to Vegas's 20 goals. And I think if we're looking at the difference between good teams versus elite teams, it's definitely in that stat somewhere. So the Wild are kind of falling into this same boat. They've scored 29, but they've allowed 34. Winnipeg, 27-4, 28 against. So the reason I'm bringing these teams up is this is our fantasy football analogy for the gold mine that we're looking for. We're looking for teams that have strong offenses and teams that are struggling to find it on D. That is where our fantasy gold is. On the complete opposite end of that spectrum, we have the Dallas Stars. So I don't know how long they're going to be able to keep this mirage up. Through six games played, they're 4-1-1, but they've scored 17 goals, albeit they've only allowed 15 as well too. So you've got a real life team that's playing really well and scoring enough to win, but fantasy wise, they're not really producing much of value at all for anybody that owns them. Pavelski's been okay, but Robo, some of the buy low candidates that are emerging through 3 weeks for a Stanley Cup favorite like Dallas. I think if anybody is in a league where you're seeing these guys move, we definitely need to urge some patience here, or maybe target that owner that's getting a little bit antsy. Jason Robertson is shooting 5.9%. And he's got less than 3 shots a game. So it's a tad concerning, but it's not panic time. Their schedule heats up next week. They play 4 games, and there's 8 teams in the league next week that only play 2 games. So next week, it is absolutely go time for the Dallas Stars, and it's go time for Jason Robertson. Honorable mention on this is going to be Jacob Chychrun. How are you doing, my man? He's shooting. He's blocking. He's scoring. He's got 4 goals and 4 apples through 8 games played. The Shabbat injury, as we've mentioned earlier, combined with a hot start, is absolute fantasy gravy for us. So, I mean, he's got 4 goals on 21 shots. He's not going to shoot 19% for the rest of the year. But he's one of these people, you can talk about players that have ceiling. And for a lot of players, it's a concept. They could do this. They could score 4 goals a game. They could take 8 shots a game. Jacob Chychrun's one of these guys that every so often actually flashes that ceiling. He had a 9-shot game earlier this week from a defenseman, a 9-shot game. Not to mention, like we said, the 4 goals on 21 shots. So I don't expect that every game. But you, again, analogy maybe more on the golf side of things here. There's players that play really smooth and even golf, 2, 3, 4 under par consistently. You can grind that out and win a lot of tournaments. But there's a lot of setups where you have to go low. And there's certain players' games that just are not set up to shoot 60 or 61. And some guys have that in them. And it's the difference a lot of times. And we're finding that in hockey as well. There's certain players that just flash this crazy upside. And it's really great to see. So Jacob Chychrun, the last two games with Shabbat out, he's averaging 28 minutes of time on ice and a minute and a half of shorthanded time on ice as well, too. So Ottawa's 4-4 and last place in the Atlantic. It is absolutely go time for the Sens over the next week or two. Fellas, what do you think?
I really liked that breakdown of fantasy gold with chasing the high offenses, the high octane offenses, and also, yeah, the teams that have basically sieves, right? Like, those teams are the ones where we want to be part of those fantasy blowouts, those fantasy shootouts. And yeah, that doesn't seem to be happening for the Dallas Stars quite yet. And frankly, I guess that does put a little dampener on our Heiskanen for Norris setup there. I'm not going to plug my mining for Morrissey that much, but 7-4, I believe. So mining for Morrissey, maybe Jason's got a little bit of a head start. We'll see if he can keep it up. He's got a fair ways to go to get to 150 points, but, you know, time will tell. I also really like the idea of, I guess in another way to describe it, Matty K, would be players with high ceilings and juxtaposing that against players with consistent floors. And yeah, Chychrun, I'm going to tell you straight up, from the 20 I had him in the previous two seasons, and yeah, he's got an immense ceiling, but my goodness, his floor has really dipped as well, especially through injury, which thankfully has not affected him. And I guess in terms of fantasy, this season has even benefited him, since it's obviously hit Shabbat for the next 4 to 6 weeks. But time will tell, really. Ottawa can absolutely light the lamp. But yeah, I think Ottawa's going to need Chychrun to hit at least like maybe not nine shots, but like definitely more than just one or two shots on the power play if they're going to be competitive and deep into the season.
So, yeah, having drafted both Chychrun and Shabbat in one league, that was perfect. Yeah, because I was like, at some point, there's going to be a transition. I just didn't account for Sanderson. As soon as Shabbat lost that power play, like, I dropped him, picked up Ghost Bear, which paid dividends for me. And then, like, that day or the next day, yeah, Shabbat got hurt. So I'm hoping some of you guys took the advice and just went ahead and dropped Shabbat or timed it or didn't. And now you can stash him in IR. Those high-scoring teams, useful information. What I think would help a lot of people more is knowing on those teams, like, who's providing the offense. I know Detroit, there's probably 2-3 people you can get in on that aren't heavily owned. But, I mean, Vegas and LA, it just seems like they're scoring more by committee than I thought they would. Like, now we're suddenly talking about guys like Paul Cotter on Vegas and some of those third line guys in LA, like, and it almost gets like Seattle, where it's hard to say, like, you can pick up this guy, he will score. It's not necessarily you'll strike gold every time on some of those teams,
but they do provide good streaming value, like you're saying.
Yeah,
some of those teams, the concentrated scoring is such that, you know, you're really taking it's hard to roster Warren Fogel. Okay, I know he plays with McDavid every now and then, you know, but the idea of having to go so far down the ladder to get somebody involved on some of these teams versus you've got line one, line two, in some cases power play one streamers on these teams that are available because ownership just isn't where it needs to be. There's a lot of shallow leagues. And everyone, that's what we say. We don't make sort of blanket statements other than just check your league. You never know who's sitting in the wire, who's hiding in the weeds, and especially these players that have been hot recently.
Yeah, and I guess for any of those listeners who are in absolutely desert leagues, consider the fact that Connor McDavid is 100% owned, which means even if you are in a desert league where the entire waiver wire is just your extended bench, you won't get Connor McDavid. But think about the fact that Clayton Keller is only 97% owned, which means ridiculously there are 3% of leagues where he is just hanging out. You keep going down, I believe Chychrun also is 86% owned. That means in 14% of the leagues, if you're listening here in a desert league, he's also just there chilling, sipping a pina colada, hanging out. You can take him onto your league and absolutely run and roll with him. Now, it's a nice segue and roll on into my main topic as well. My main topic here is a build-up on the previous mention of the 20-game check-in. And fellas, as of this weekend, we're the closest we've got to the 10-game, as we're going to be. We're going to be past it as of next quick fares. And yeah, just kind of look, glance around at those standings, see what's happening right now. Boston, Vegas, Colorado. This is not necessarily surprising, but what definitely is surprising is if you scroll to the very bottom of these leagues, San Jose surprises absolutely nobody that they've only gotten 1 point despite having played 9 games. What is wild is that as of tonight, and I know the Oilers just closed out their game, but the Calgary Flames, my goodness, how poorly have they started their season, and yet they went into tonight's Winter Classic above the Oilers. The Oilers just snapped a 3-game, or was it a 4-game losing streak? This is not a team, and everybody agrees. Nobody is going to give up on the Oilers, but these Oilers have given up a lot of opportunities early to snag and bank some points. It's worth remembering again with a 20-gamer, teams in playoff position by game 20 remain so 80% of the time. I fully believe that the Edmonton Oilers are not only a playoff-bound team, but a, honestly, cup-contending, challenging team. They're going to need to buck the trend and get an early, early lead. And I know we mentioned, I had the honorable mention as well with the Boston Bruins and the Vegas Golden Knights. I completely underestimated these guys. Honestly, should probably, and I would say, and advise for others as well, go look into those teams. I honestly remember a lot of their tandems not being fully owned, so Aiden Hill might be taken, and Logan Thompson might have been dropped on a lighter week. I don't believe Swayman or Ullmark have ever been dropped in any league that I have seen, but would it be worthwhile to target and trade for one of them? That is a consideration a manager might have. These teams were the President's Trophy winner and the Stanley Cup winner from last season, and their, I believe the quote is, their demise might have been overly stated or otherwise. This is not, I don't know necessarily that I can see them breaking their records from previous seasons or the Vegas Golden Knights repeating as Stanley Cup champs, but yeah, they are legitimate. They are solid. If you can get a chance to target any of those players, go for it.
Yeah, rumors of demise are greatly exaggerated, I believe. No, it's true, though. I mean, it's like they're hiding in plain sight, both of those teams. And, you know, they've got a couple of star players that went, you know, early in a lot of cases, but there's scoring available on both of those teams up and down the roster. You know, even in Vegas, you know, I look at some of the ownership percentage here. Ivan Barbashev is 37% owned, right? Dual eligible. Look at who he plays with, right? The decor. There's eligible pieces there that you can pick up. There's the Paul Cotters of the world. So again, there's accessible pieces from these teams that are going to help stream you throughout these coming weeks. So I think there's a lot of fantasy gold there. Teams are starting to show us who they are. It's like bits and pieces that are kind of coming together to formulate an idea of like, okay, this seems to be how they're playing. And there's some pretty tough narratives put into place right now. Edmonton being at the top of that list, like we just said. Edmonton and Calgary's lost 5 in a row, but both of those teams are really looking up at the playoff picture early on, which means they got to get on some runs.
I was also super down on Boston, but less so Vegas. Vegas didn't really lose much in the offseason, but to me, Boston losing a perennial Selke winner and then their reliable stalwart of Krejci at 2C, I'm like, guy, like, how are they going to win? Yeah, how are they going to win faceoffs? Like, it's hard to generate offense if now you're chasing the puck right from the drop. But no, apparently Zacha serviceable. They got Poitras who may earn a spot in the season as 2C, maybe 1C if they really like him. But yeah, no, I just simply thought Vegas was going to be a victim of cup hangover, which I think is probably part of what we're seeing in Florida, but I would say missing two of their best defensemen also has a big hand in it. But yeah, the tandems, I would say, yeah, check and see who's out there, because it seems like Hill and Thompson are running pretty evenly. Ullmark and Swayman absolutely are. I know that was the case last season.
It's not only goalies in those teams, too. 100%. Matty K mentioned with a lot of those guys running down throughout the lineups. Like, I would even say some of the power play two guys are probably worth considering on some of the top teams when they're really firing and clicking. I would even say, too, they're trying to purposefully give more run, I guess, lessen the load on players such as Jack Eichel, who I'm making the joke on his back, but he literally had surgery and they'd want to keep the load light on him. And yeah, like Petrangelo's still out right now. I can imagine they probably want to keep him fresh for the runs.
Stevenson, though, I mean, depending on your league setup, in one of the leagues that I'm in, Stevenson's a waiver guy.
Yeah.
You know, gets picked up, dropped. Center depth is tough. So you're getting these pieces on a great team. And their off-night schedule is good, too. So you're getting a lot of those points.
I guess we'll roll back up to the top, Alan, and we'll go with your hot guy check-ins. And I guess we'll also see what your confessional is, Alan, this time around.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do a little hot guy check-in. Hot guy
check-in. Let's do it.
So my pick for hot guy check-in, total homer. Aww. I'm going Nick Paul. He does it all. Doesn't hit as much, but yeah, scores points, blocks, shoots, takes face off some. With the departure of Killorn and Palat the last couple seasons, he's getting that top power play, and he's getting more than 50%, which is, that's how Tampa goes. They stack that top unit, and it's getting pretty much the whole shift. And that's up from 22% power play share last year. In the past three games, according to Left Wing Lock, that Paul Stamkos Hagel line is the second frequently most used line after Barry Boulay, Point, and Cooch. He's getting 16 minutes time on ice. Okay, all right. And then his IPP. So, and then for those of you who have no idea what that is the percentage of the goals scored while they are on the ice. They either scored the goal themselves or got an assist on it. They were involved in that goal. He's at 66% IPP so far this season. 68 is the average for forwards, so that's all trending great. Like, yeah, no problems here. But looking further under the hood, his five goals on 16 shots is 31%. That's not sustainable. And then four of his 7 points are on the power play. So, yeah, Tampa's got an elite power play. I think they're fifth right now. If that power play dries up, that point production dries up. So, yeah, you could stream him right now while he's on this hot streak, but know that if their power play struggles, that's definitely going to hamper his production. And then for confessional, this one hurts the most, but I felt like I had to get out as soon as I was on quick fares. I've been a bad, bad boy, Father. I've held this grudge for about 20 years. Actually, this individual just organized my high school reunion. Detroit.
Oh, he's doing it.
Might be pretty good this season, man. I think of those teams, Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, that were like, yeah, they could totally vie for a playoff. They seem to the most likely.
Yeah, we were hyping up Dylan Larkin. We were talking about DeBrincat, and they've just ground running.
Ghost Bear. Now, they dropped their last two, but still, like we discussed, it's not all their scoring is wrapped up in Larkin and DeBrincat. Like, they're getting depth scoring, which, especially once you hit playoffs, is very important.
Yeah, like Cider has not fallen off a cliff, and more importantly, Ghost Bear. My goodness, like I know they weren't coming out of nothing. They've already had, like, to some degree, proven records of being able to run an offense effectively. But yeah, Detroit has not slept coming out. And to what start an ad too.
I mean, nobody really drafted Ghost unless you're in a really deep league. So for most people, picked up a streamer week one, week two, and you got a PP1 quarterback, set it and forget it.
I think that was who I picked up when I dropped Shabbat, was Ghost Bear in one league. And yeah, that immediately paid dividends.
Oh, man. Wow. What a confessional indeed. Yeah. oh, man. Matty K, what's your hot guy
check-in? So I got a couple hot guy check-ins here that we can start with. The first and foremost being, you know, coming off of yesterday's performance as well, Frankie, sunshine on your goddamn shoulders for Toronto. 8 goals in 8 games played. He's wearing the tape off the stick. He's shooting. He's got solid blocks and periffs overall. Also, more importantly, 64% owned. Only 2/3 of leagues this guy's even rostered. With, again, Anaheim having the best off-night schedule in the league, head and shoulders. Meaning you get every single one of the fantasy points, whether it's categories or especially in points leagues, every bit of production that this guy generates, you're going to have. Because odds are really good he's in the league. He's going to be in your lineup compared to a similar player that plays way more heavy nights and is going to be sitting on your bench. You might get 60, 70, 80% of that production. Not all of it, like Frankie V. We talked about ceiling earlier. 2 hat tricks so far to start the year. So again, showing he's got splash play potential. He's got ceiling. And for anybody that's in a Cats league, there's one thing to generate production consistently over the course of the season. You need some of those guys in your roster to stay competitive. What you also need is ceiling performances week in and week out. Not by the same person on your, unless you have McDavid, not by the same person, but somebody like a Vetrano that can get streamed in and not only gives you a contribution, but gives you a ceiling level contribution. Those can be the differences between winning and losing a week. I mean, he's lined to everything. He does play a lot of shorthanded time, racks up the periffs, 2 hits a game, 1.5 blocks a game, 29 shots on the game. The guy's literally been doing everything. And like we said, Anaheim's won 3 straight and they're 4th in the Pacific. So, I mean, crazier things have happened. It's good to see him. Second Hawkeye check-in, Artemi Panarin. This year, the bread man is delivering the puck way more. He's got 4 goals, 8 assists through 8 games. And look at the shots, fellas. This is a career 2.5 shots a game guy. And he's up close to 4 shots a game with 31 through 8. That's elite. That's elite territory. He's shooting 12.5% versus a career 14%. So, I mean, realistically, he could even tag another goal on there, maybe 2. Now, the thing with him, obviously, is we joke that he's a peripheral wasteland. His shot, his hits, and his blocks are literally 0 through 7 games. Like, not a couple, they're 0s through both. So, again,
yeah,
we are giving that up, of course, because he's playing 3.5 minutes of power play time on ice per night with the number 2 PP in the league. So, Artemi Panarin has certainly been delivering for all of his fantasy owners. And if we're going to be stepping into a confessional here, I played a part in this, albeit a minor one, and I still think this individual is going to help fantasy owners throughout the season. But my confessional is, we hyped the wrong flyer coming into the season. So to set this up, Owen Tippett's been good. They've played 8 games. He's got 31 shots on goal, right? So again, approaching that 4 shots on game threshold. However, he's got 1 goal. So again, nobody's going to shoot 3.9%. For the entire year. That's 2022 Boldy territory, the Bermuda Triangle of production, as we've talked about before. So other than Tippett being a little bit down time on ice, 15.5 or so per game this year compared to finishing off last year around 17.5, you know, line one PP2, he does have upward mobility if it weren't for the real flyer that we should have been touting coming out of this season, which is the man, Travis Konecny. So he's 1 off the NHL goal lead through tonight with 8 goals in 8 games. He's taken 29 shots, so I know he's not going to shoot 27.5% all year. The thing that's really standing out, though, with Konecny, aside from a goal a game pace, is over the last 3 years, he's gone from 2.8 shots a game, up over 3 last year to 3.2. And now this year, coming out of the gates, 3.6 shots a game and entering that rarefied air. So we talk about a progression for a player. We know Torts loves him and he's getting all the top deployment. As we've said before, he is not quite the peripheral wasteland that Panarin was, but this dude is all gas, no brakes when it comes to your performance. So that's where I stand.
I cannot believe that Artemi Panarin has no hits and no blocks.
The bread man's been delivering donuts season for the periffs.
Dude, like I said in the division previews, I had that in my notes, man. He just does nothing. If he's not scoring, you get nothing from him.
Well, thank goodness he's doing like a ton on the other end. But yeah, I'm looking at Frank Vetrano trying to see if I have him open in any leagues. My goodness, he's fourth in the listener league, which is insane. This is the same league with Draisaitl, with
it's the periffs, Matthews, right? Like he's Pasternak shooting, he's blocking, he's hitting, he's scoring. It's I mean, again, I don't think it's going to stay that way for the entirety of the year, but man, like if he keeps any of this up with Killorn coming back a little bit later in the season, like I say, I just love the fact that you get all of his production, and the fact that he's actually giving you ceiling level production while he's doing it is just icing.
Where in the world is this even coming from? Like, this guy is a career 0.5 point per game. What is this guy? 29-year-old breakout season?
He's the guy you're
what?
Googling against the person you lost your week to.
Yeah, that's a really good way to phrase it and put it. And I guess, my goodness, hot guy check-in indeed. I don't know if he's going to be available in many leagues post-Monday. Like, this kind of seems like the guy that everybody picked up, like the Montour of this season might be on the Gold Coast, West Coast this season, might be Frankie V. I will say, I guess, if we're going to roll on a little bit around to my end for my hot guy check-in and my confessional, my quick hot guy check-in is Seth Jarvis. Aho's back. I believe Svechnikov as well came back today, and yet Seth Jarvis was still getting power play one time, which is incredible. Hope it remains, might not, given that he's already, I believe, been sliding. I believe he still kept on to line one, but I can't imagine, even with the Bryn DeMoor blender, that he's going to remain constantly for the rest of the 82-game season, line one, power play one. Definitely Seth Jarvis has been filling up the stat sheet stuff and stat sheets the past 2 weeks. Keep him on and see how it goes. My confessional is at the very end of our preseason previews, I may or may not have stated that the Edmonton Oilers were not only going to be 130 plus points for the season, but also that they would be doing so on the backs of two goalies and the super Edmonton Oiler goalie tandem of Stuart Skinner and Jack Campbell. And I now find myself in the scenario and situation in this confessional where both Skinner and Campbell are readily available on almost all waiver wires and constantly added, constantly dropped, and they've just gone seesaw, and I have not felt inclined, despite my brave, bold words, to add either of them onto my lineups. And so I'm going to step in this confessional and say, early season goings, but I may not be on the right side of this Edmonton goalie tandem league revolutionary winning.
I mean, I thought as a fantasy community, we made a deal with Edmonton. We said, your goalies can be hot garbage for literally every single season. Even when they were winning cup upon cup upon cup, they still had the net filled behind them. They just scored more. But more recently, right? The deal was they can be terrible between the pipes, and we'll exchange that for the fact that we're going to get 50 or 55 wins, and I'm going to get those 3 points for the W, and I'll stomach whatever the GAA looks like, and you might fall into a donut every now and then, but for the most part, it's going to be the sausage making in the middle is going to be terrible, but you're just searching for that win. And when they cannot provide that win, what are they, two wins now after the Heritage today? When they're not delivering those 3 points, and depending on your league settings, you're getting caved in on saves or shots or, you know, the ratios, they're borderline rosterable. Like we're saying, like, you show me the league setting where it's EV positive for me to have either one of these guys anywhere near my league.
They are genuinely really heartbreakingly terrible. I'm looking at the league right now in the listener league, and Stuart Skinner has 4 points over four games played. That is...
Oh, one point he was like negative 8 points. It was disgusting.
They need to be stopping something, right? This is not goaltending. This is pasta straining. Like it's a little much now. And it's getting to the point again where 10 games into the season, you're gonna need something else, right? There is value elsewhere on the wire, exactly as Matty Kay was mentioning. The other one is too, do they get the same volume of shots against as other bulk starters do? I do feel sometimes when you watch the games, it's not necessarily that Edmonton's getting pounded. More than anything, Edmonton drives a lot of play up the other end of the ice. But once the odd man rush rolls off the other way, they're not stepping up. Like these, nothing against Jack and nothing against Skinner, but they're not stepping up to be that difference maker, that Grant Fuhrer, so to speak. And I guess with that confessional out of the way, I guess I'll roll off back to Alan and
That's going to wrap it for tonight's quick fares, and we're going to park the van cab for the night. As always, we ask that you grade A beauticians like, subscribe, and leave us a review on your pod platform of choice. You can also follow us on the Twitters and the YouTubes. All that info is in the show notes. And if you haven't already, come join us in the Five Hole Discord, also in the show notes. We talk about fantasy hockey. There's, I think, about 2,500 of us in not just fantasy hockey, but life in general. And then just everyone out there, good luck, good hockey this week, and thanks for listening.
Great show, fellas. Let's do it again.
We'll pick you up later.